T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Mike's on. He's ready to go.
On the Fan.
New York Sports Radio.
Mike's on. Mike's on.
He'll get you the sports any way that he can. It's Mike Francesa
on the Fan. Sports Radio 66 and 101.9 FM WFAN.
All right, we come to you on this last Friday in June, brought to you by Casamigos Tequila, as always, brought to you by those who drink it, and without question, a lot going on, but the story of the day without any question is Phil Mickelson, lefty who is just 50 years of age. He turned 50 a couple of days ago, just on the, I believe, the 16th of June. So here's Mickelson, 50 years old, and he now has wrested the lead at the Travelers. Obviously, they all bring this course to its knees. If you shoot more than 65, you lose ground. But Mickelson shot 64 yesterday. He followed up with a 63 today. He has a 13. He's 13 on the par, which leads the tournament and will lead the tournament into the weekend. So the ageless one, Phil Mickelson, who is always there to provide a thrill, has provided a bunch on Thursday and Friday up in the TPC course up in River Highlands, up in Connecticut and Cromwell, and is 13 under par and will without question be one of the big stories tonight and tomorrow as he goes into Saturday action with the lead. He is being tracked by, obviously, round one leader Mackenzie Hughes, who went out and had a struggle over a second round because he shot 60 the first round. He's got another par here in the second round. He's 12 under par. He's still on the course. Gordon's 12 under, and at 9 under are some dangerous players, including Rory McIlroy at 9 under. Leishman's playing 18, so he could go to 10 under. He's 9 under. He's one of my picks for the weekend, and he is going to go. He could go to 10 under. He's right now 9 under, playing 18. Todd and Steele and Schauffele are 9 under, and a host at 8 under, who are all still in the tournament, including one of my other picks, Anser, who has been playing very well, including DeChambeau, and Zach Johnson, Nah, Streelman, Hovland, a lot of players. And then at 7 under, you have guys like Dustin Johnson, who is still in it. But you're going to have to go out if you're Cantley or Johnson and you're 7 under. You're going to have to go out and really shoot a big round on Saturday. Again, I don't know if Phil can do 4 rounds of this. It's not easy for him to put 4 rounds together anymore. But right now, playing electric golf, playing brilliantly over 2 days. You knew they were going to put this score in the 20s, just like last week. Listen, they bring these courses to their knees. This is also the second shortest course on the tour, which doesn't matter to Phil because he's a long hitter anyway. But they are obviously tearing the course up, and they'll continue to tear it up over the weekend. The winning score will probably be somewhere around 20 under par, maybe even more, maybe 23 under par. Who knows? We'll see how low they go. But the fun part is McIlroy's in there. Schauffele's in there. Bunch of other guys in there, but the leader is the one and only Phil Mickelson at 13 under par. Okay, you had another golfer on the course test positive today. He and then his playing mate both left. Okay, so McCarthy tested positive. Corley played with McCarthy. They both withdrew, so they're both out. So that makes 7 for the week up at the golf. The NBA tested 302 players, 16 tested positive. Silver said, listen, nothing is risk-free. Nothing is for sure in this thing. And you can sure tell that. Clemson added 14 more players, which means 37 players have tested positive at Clemson football. I mean, every day it's more and more and more. And it does put a lot of these sports. It really puts every one of them into some shadow of doubt as can they get through the training camps, which will be moving into high gear soon. And then the starts of the years that are going to be coming in the month of July. So as you get through the next weekend, 4th of July weekend, after that you can start to zero in on sports which will be coming your way. You still have golf. You still have horse racing. But then the team sports are going to try and make a comeback, and we'll see if they can make it back and under what rules they come back, under what protocols they come back, how much of the virus, they're going to get some positives, but how much can they withstand? That's really what this is about. How much can these leagues take? What is their tolerance level? What is the threshold that they can live with as these sports unfold and try and get back onto the field? In the case of the NBA, to finish a season, in the case of the NHL, to finish the season, in the case of Major League Baseball, to try to start and get some semblance of a season in, although 60 games is a little bit of a farce, but hey, it's better than nothing, and it will get you, they hope, to a postseason. And football sits in the wings, college football with questions to answer, and obviously the NFL waiting to see what's going to happen more than anything else, waiting to see what's going to happen. So the only one left on the course now is Hughes, who is on the leaderboard. He is playing 18. Otherwise, it's Mickelson, Gordon, Hughes, McIlroy, Schauffele, Leishman are all 9 under, Steele, Todd, and then the 8 under is led by DeChambeau. And Dustin Johnson leads the 7s, and that's where we are as we head to the weekend at the TPC up at River Highland, the Travelers. And again, a 50-year-old superstar by the name of Phil Mickelson leads the tournament, which gives them a very big headline and gives them a major attraction for television on Saturday. People will be waiting at 2 o'clock tomorrow afternoon to turn their sets on and see if Phil can take them into the weekend. So if he can lead it on Saturday and then be right in the mix or lead it on Sunday, you have a very big weekend with Phil Mickelson leading the way. And let's be honest, unexpectedly leading the way in this tournament right now. You had some players who, you know, you expected big things out of, who did not have big weeks. Now, the cut's going to be at either 3 or 4. We're not sure yet. You have some guys at 3 who will be on edge, including Bubba Watson, who's won it 3 times and who is 3 under par. And then you have some guys who clearly did not have big weeks who were named players, including Morikawa, who misses a cut, had not missed a cut yet. He did not play well in this tournament. He was 3 over par. That's not playing well on these courses. You have Justin Thomas shooting over par both days, 71-71 and gone. Kisner gone. Fratelli, who played well last week, didn't make it. Schwartzel didn't make it. Justin Rose didn't make it. List didn't make it. Fitzpatrick didn't make it. And there's a bunch of 2 under who will not make it. And then we get to the 3s and we just don't know. And in the group at the 3s are Finau, Bubba Watson. And then you have some guys at 4 like Spieth and Reed and guys like that. It looks like the 4s are okay. We're not sure about the 3s yet because 4 takes you through 50 players. We'll see exactly what the cut line is. Either 3 or 4 we'll believe it'll be. We'll see what they say, and we'll see if the 3s get in, and that's where we are as we head to the weekend. We're going to talk some baseball with Ron Darling in just a minute. We'll take a quick break, and we'll come back with him right after this. All right, we're back, and hopefully as the weeks go by, we'll get a break here, and some of these sports will get back, and they won't get closed down before they ever get started, and that's what everyone's hoping about, including baseball, which they believe we're going to target to July the 24th. We'll see what happens there. We welcome in Ron Darling, who you'll all hear soon enough if things move in the right direction. Ron, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Mike. I'm sure a lot of people are happy that they haven't had to hear me, but I'm coming back.
No, they're all missing you, Ron. They want you to come back. First of all, I mean, from what you've heard and what you believe your role will be, and considering what you've gone through health-wise, are you comfortable with everything?
Well, am I comfortable? That's a great question right off the bat. I would say that I've been more comfortable over a lot of different things. This is certainly doesn't make me 100% comfortable, but, you know, Mike, this is kind of what we do. And, you know, I call games, and the players play games. And, you know, I heard a quote from Adam Silver, or read a quote from Adam Silver today saying that, you know, we are going to be playing sports with the virus. I mean, we've got to learn to play sports with the virus out there. And I guess that's kind of what we're all going to be doing, because people are going to get sick. And, you know, you've got to make your own personal decision. But, you know, at the end of the day, that's what I do. I call games.
Now, you will probably, what I've heard so far is you guys will probably be up in the booth, and then you won't be on the road with the team. You'll be calling it from a studio, right?
Yeah, they want to eliminate, you know, as many moving parts and people traveling, of course. So we'll be calling the home games from Citi Field.
Right.
And Mike, I think what we're going to do is we're going to be calling the away games from Citi Field.
Oh, okay, that makes sense. Okay, so you'll be in the same place for both. Okay.
Yeah, so it'll be the truck out there and the booth, and we'll just, I guess we'll do like old-time radio. We'll have, you know, drums and
yes.
And make some noise.
Yeah, like the old days when they used to recreate the games, you know, Les Kiter and those guys. Absolutely.
Right.
But that's before your time, Ron, so you shouldn't even know about that stuff. All right. But Ron's a good historian, so he does. All right. Let me get into it from the standpoint of the team.
Yeah.
Put yourself back as a player. What do you think the play is? The player's trepidation more occupational, or is it more about health?
I don't think it's occupational. I think, you know, the guys, for the most part, are going to be ready to go. Now, you're certainly going to have outliers, guys that have said they've done a lot and have done really very little during this time.
Right.
But that's always the case. It doesn't matter what profession it is. That's always going to be the case. But for the most part, I think the guys are going to be ready to go, and I think you're going to have a surprisingly A-type product on the field right away. Really
interesting.
Do.
Okay.
But as far as the health...
Do you think the players have a health... Do you think they have a very heavy feeling about the risk here, or do you think it's not as pronounced because of their age?
Well, I think... No, I think because of their age and, of course, you know, the health that they're in, other than people that are, you know, have some pre-existing conditions.
Right.
I think they will feel... pretty confident that as far as the baseball is concerned, and I'm talking about the travel, going to the ballpark, all of those things I think are going to be under the protocol. I saw the protocol. It's very extensive, very thorough. So I think that's going to be great. The only problem, Mike, is how serious the ball players take it when they go home.
Right.
How serious do their families take it
right.
During the day?
Right.
That is going to be the big you know, that's what's going to change whether people get sick or a lot of people get sick.
Right, and that's what has happened with, say, Clemson football or some of the golfers, is that they went out in the community when they weren't playing golf or weren't playing football, and that's obviously some of the issues. That's why you had 37 players test positive for Clemson football already, 37 players.
Yeah.
I mean, amazingly. Yeah. What you do with the rest of your time is going to be critical, obviously. Ron, from a pitching standpoint, let me start with starting pitchers.
Okay.
Is it spring training-like, or will this be very different than spring training-like in preparation?
I think it'll be a little of each. It'll be spring training-like, absolutely, because, you know, teams are going to get their pitches ready like they always have traditionally. But I do think it's going to be on the individual pitcher, whoever that is, to be able to look themselves in the mirror and say, hey, how much did I do? How ready am I to go? And I've got to be able to say to myself, occasionally I might have to pull back on the throttle. I think that it takes a real strong personality, a very bright person to do that. because, you know, your inclination is to rush and be ready. And that's just the opposite thing that you can do. I think you really have to measure yourself, wake up in the morning, how do you feel, where do you have pain, this or that, and move yourself into a place where you are really concentrating, if you're DeGrom, on July 23rd or 24th. That's your look to. And I think that with the pitchers and knowledge of himself and, of course, the team taking care of them, you know, you might see some 5-6 innings. Or you might see a guy like DeGrom cruising, but his pitch count's up and leaving after 4 2/3. That could happen in this game the first couple of weeks.
We're talking with Ron Darling. You know, Ron, we always hear about team pitching depth and how much pitching an organization has. This year, there are going to be more pitchers that are going to be called on. There are going to be more pitchers that are going to be utilized with these rosters. So pitching depth is going to be at a premium. How much do you think that will be different team to team? Or do you think when you're getting into the 14th and 15th pitcher that are going to be carried, you think the quality will differ team to team? Or you think it will be very comparable team to team?
No, I think it certainly will differ. The one thing that won't change, though, Mike, is that, and you know, probably a lot of people disagree with me on this one, but for a majority or for a myriad of reasons, every team, let's say they have 15 pitchers going into this thing, there's going to be 30 players on the roster when you play each and every game in the first couple of weeks. If you have 15 pitchers, Mike, realistically, 10 of them are major league pitchers. And I say that not because the other five pitchers are not good. We're talking about they could have, it could be an older pitcher who's not quite ready. It could be a younger pitcher who hasn't gotten enough seasoning. It could be a pitcher pitching with injury. My knowledge of the game is that it doesn't matter how many added pitchers you add. There's really 10 guys you can count on, and that'll always be the case. So it's going to get down to, you know, how strong you are with those 10, and the next two, maybe three guys, are they, you know, are they 4A? Are they major league? Are they AAA? That I think the teams that have, you know, Detroit's teams that have struggled the last couple of years, when they go to the well, they will probably have AAA guys, you know, guys that aren't as ready. The good teams will have guys that will be able to get out to major league level.
We're talking about Ron Darling. You know, Ron, I've always felt that if I owned a team, I would put a premium on having the right guy in a pitching coach job, because to me, he can be invaluable. I mean, Dave Duncan was worth his weight in gold when he was in the league. He was more valuable than the manager. I mean, so to me, it's like having that great defensive coordinator. All right, maybe he's not a head coach temperament-wise. Maybe he likes the role that he's in. But to me, right now, this year, the most important guy, I think, on almost every team is the pitching coach, on how he can get a staff ready and get a staff, you know, pitching well under these conditions.
You know, Mike, that is a great point. You know, when you think about baseball, the hitting instructors are less now. And why is that? Almost all of these young guys have their own hitting coaches that they go to during the season and the off season to work with. So the hitting coach is not as important, but the pitching coach, still the day-to-day nurturing these pitchers through the mental toughness it is to play a season, and even this truncated season, there's going to be so much, not only on the pitching coach to work with these guys and get them where they are 100%, but, Mike, if a guy is off a little bit, last year DeGrom, what, in the first maybe 6 or 7 starts, had an ERA 3.5, close to 4, you can't really afford Jacob DeGrom not to be excellent the entire year. So you're going to have to, if someone's struggling, who's one of your top tier pitchers, you're going to have to tweak it in a way and get him right quicker than you would have to, of course, over a 162-game season. If you lose 6 or 7 games in a row, which happens to most teams, Mike, over the course of a long season, if you do that over a 60-game season, that's like losing 20 in a row.
No, devastating. And that's why fast starts are going to be imperative, which is going to put a lot of pressure on pitching coaches to have their guys ready. Do you think it's going to put more pressure on the starters or a lot more pressure on the bullpen?
I think it's going to be a lot more pressure on the starters because the bullpen is interchangeable in a way. And the reason I say the starters is because what staff gets up to speed quicker or quick enough Because let's think of the Mets, you know, or any team you're talking about. You know, some of their biggest strengths, the Washington Nationals, are their starting pitching. If Max Scherzer and Steven Strasburg are getting 15 outs a game, that's not going to help the Nationals. As soon as they can get them up to speed where they're getting 21 outs a game, where their best pitchers are out there for the longest period of time, those teams are going to be the ones that have a chance to get to, you know, 35 to 40 wins.
So in a 60-game season, are you going to push these guys to go longer early? Are we going to see teams push their key starters earlier in the season than we normally would?
I would if that's your strength. Now, there's going to be some teams who use openers.
But don't have that. But let's say the teams that do have the good guys, you think they're going to push those guys early this year? Because it's only 60 games. You want to get out fast if you can help it.
I would. I know that that's counterintuitive to health and all those kind of things. But what are you trying to do here? I mean, you're trying to win, right? You're trying to get in the postseason. And the only way to do that is to make sure your best players are playing all the time. We're also going to see it on the guys playing every day. I mean, you know, who's going to take a day off? Can't take any days off. You know, like, you know, in the past, you've had guys that say, well, you know, I play 6 days a week or 5 days a week. I'd like a blow here or there. But now I think that you've got to have the mindset, if you're an elite player, that you have to play 60 games or close to it.
Well, you look at it, this way. If you're 5-10 after 15 games, I mean, you're up against it. You've already put yourself in a deep hole. You don't want to be 5 games under 500 in this season. You really don't. You don't want to be 5 games under 500 at any point in this thing. It's too hard to come back. It's going to take you 10 games just to get back from that.
Well, think of the Nationals last year were 19-31 after 50 games.
You wouldn't overcome that. You can't overcome that. That's impossible.
There's no chance. I mean, you might be able to tread water for the first 50 games at 10-10, but you can't do much less than that, because what's going to happen, Mike, is that you're going to have teams that aren't over a 162-game season, a good team. But they're going to get off to a quick start. They're going to maybe have a young team. Let's say the Chicago White Sox. Right?
Well, it's funny you mention them, because I asked two people to give me in baseball teams that they thought could jump out that aren't that good and hide. And the two teams people gave me were the White Sox and the Texas Rangers.
Yeah. And, you know, remember the Rangers last year had a great first half under Chris Woodward, their manager, and then kind of faltered at the end. So they got off to a quick start. And then the White Sox have talent galore. And if they start believing in themselves a year or two early, you know, they could really surprise you. So, you know, we're going to have teams that over 162-game schedule might not traditionally be able to stay with the pack. But anyone, I mean anyone, we're going to have, out of the 10 teams to make the postseason, there'll be two where you're going to shake your head and say, really? They're in the postseason? That is going to happen.
Hey, you jump out 10-2, you're in pretty good shape in this thing. You really are. I mean, if you jump out 10-2, which is going to be 1/5 of the season, that's already putting 1/5 of the season behind you. I mean, that's it. I mean, that's it. When you think about it, that's a great start if you can do it. So from that standpoint, getting out of the box quick, what is the key in your mind for the Mets to get out of the box quick?
The key for them is that they're going to have to hit a ton. You know, they have said that their lineup is solid from top to bottom, and I think it is. But they can't afford to come out of the blocks scoring 2 or 3 runs a game. They've got to come out and punish people. Their lineup, and I know they've always been a team that's been pitching rich, and they've relied on their pitching, and they still are going to rely a lot on their starters. But they have a lineup that should really score some runs. And if they do that, then I think they'll get off to a quick start. If they struggle offensively early, then I don't think they will.
You know, people ask me, who does it help, good teams or bad teams? It clearly helps the inferior teams, because over 162 games, your talent's going to show, your depth is going to show. The cream's going to come to the top. Over a third of a season, which is really what this is, you know what? You might not fire, and somebody might get out 15-5 and look back. So I think it clearly helps the teams that aren't as talented.
I think it helps the teams.
Do you think it helps? Let me ask you one other one quick, though. Do you think it helps the younger team or the older team?
I think it helps the younger team, because I think sometimes just energy alone, Mike, to be able to come back and play. I mean, it's going to be, what, 60 games in 66 days? So there's not going to be any rest for these guys. So I think you're going to have a surprise, a young team that's going to get out there. Second, I think that, as far as jumping out and getting out there, a lot of it has to do with the schedule, too. You know, the Mets have to play the Yankees, the Rays, the Red Sox. That doesn't help a lot. You know, so it depends a lot on your divisions. If you're playing in the Central, you might have a little easy go of it occasionally when you have to face.
That's really unfair for the Mets when you think about it. It really is. Because they do, the Red Sox aren't as good, but they still get hurt by dealing with the Rays, who you know are very good, and the Yankees, who could be exceptional. I mean, so that definitely hurts them. There's no question.
Other than when the Mets face the O's and the Marlins, it'll be a toss up every night, right?
Absolutely. And do you, if you had to design a pitching staff, would you want one with a deeper starting staff right now, or would you take one that had a really good deep bullpen with a major closer?
I'd like two things. I'd like a really deep bullpen with a lock solid closer, but I'd also want a manager who knows how to use the bullpen. I think that's going to be really
Joe Girardi.
That came to mind. I talked to
Great bullpen. Greatest edge he has, I think, as a manager, is he's great with the bullpen.
I totally agree. I talked to Tom McCarthy, who does the TV for Philadelphia, and I said they have one of the big advantages because Girardi is going to know exactly when to pull the trigger. And, there's going to be a lot of managers that I think are going to still think this is a traditional kind of schedule and going to be hemming and hawing. He won't. He will go to that phone. He'll go to it often. And he'll play every game like the seventh game. And I know there's been some criticism in the past for Joe saying, he plays every game like the seventh game. Well, they are like that in this schedule. It really plays to his strength.
One thing he never did, though, he never abused pitchers, though. Torrey sometimes would ride a pitcher to him being tired. He'd ride the same guy. That was a fault of Joe's. It was not a fault of Girardi's. Girardi had other faults, but his fault, he was very good at never abusing his pitchers. Now, in this case, you might have to abuse your pitchers a little bit this year.
Yeah, I think that you're going to have to ask your pitchers to get more outs than they're used to early in a season, even though it's in July. I mean, Betances coming off an injury last year with the Mets, he might be asked to do what he did in his heyday with the Yankees, and that's get four or five outs in the course of a ball game. So, it's kind of I know it's a cliche, but it really is all hands on deck. You know, if you're going to play, you've come. There's no excuse. You can't say, hey, we're starting late. We're only playing 60 games, whatever. You've got to be able to mentally get yourself in a place that this is the last 2 months of the season, and we've got to go 40-20. Somehow, some way, we've got to go 40-20.
You think the players, I think the managers understand this. Do you think the players buy into this right now? Or are they going to look at it, you think they're going to look at it like that going into the season? Do you think that's something that has to be sold to them, or you think they understand that?
Well, you hope they understand it, but I think those managers that have the ability to communicate with their players and give them little things that they can think about that get them in that right spot to be grinding every day. The great players are going to grind it. You don't have to worry about those guys. But, there are those guys that you have to really pull along with you. And the managers that communicate the best are the ones that are going to be able to have a full team effort.
Utilization of guys in the pen – For some of the guys on the Mets who are versatile, do you see their roles changing this year?
I see this, Mike, is that you have a two-game maximum to not be good. If you're not good for two games in a row, you're down at the bottom of the totem pole. So I think it's going to be really one of those scrums for these relievers to get to the top of the hill or the top man in that bullpen. And if you have two bad games, you go to the bottom. And
so you don't get to work out your problems this year in the games, that's for sure.
You're going to have to work it out with a psychiatrist or a psychologist or someone. You're not going to be able to work it on the field or with your teammates. It's just there's too much on the line.
How about riding players that are in slumps?
Well, that's something, if it's Bryce Harper or Mike Trout or Yelich or guys like that.
What if it's a guy that you don't know if he's getting old or not? You know, one of those kind of guys. You know,
maybe like a Robinson Cano or someone like that.
Yeah,
I would say that you cannot. You've got to let all your players know that you are the manager. You're in charge of getting this team to the postseason, and I hope no one takes anything personal, because there's not going to be anything personal here. What we're going to do is we're going to get to the postseason, and we're going to get there with the players that are playing the best.
So it's a meritocracy this year.
100%. Doesn't matter. You know how Mike has been in the past. A guy's making a certain amount of money, he's got to play.
Yep.
A guy's got a certain baseball,
reputation.
He's got to play. I think you're doing yourself and your team a disservice if you don't play the hot hand.
So it's a meritocracy. Do you think that does that mean these guys from now until the first game, do they have to train differently than they would for a normal spring training?
No, I think that spring training is too long anyways, Mike. I think 3 weeks is...
So they can get ready. In your mind, they can be ready anyway.
100% they can get ready. You know, spring training has evolved because, you know, there's real money that is made in spring training. All the ballparks are sold out, and people love coming to the games and bringing their family down. But as far as getting ready for a season, if you're in shape when you come to Yankee Stadium or Citi Field, 3 weeks is plenty.
All right, knowing what you know about the Mets and plugging them into this very, very different season, what are your expectations?
My expectations is that they're a postseason team. They're a team that has a lineup now, and I'm not even counting Cespedes as being 100% and being a DH all through the year, the 60-game season. I think they have a lineup that, for the first time in quite some time, maybe since the 2006 team, a lineup that can really score runs. And I think you're going to have to score runs because, don't forget, you're not going to always be playing those National League East games where it's 3-1, 4-2. You're going to be playing the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Rays.
The high-scoring games. Yep.
You're going to have to slug.
Yep.
And if you don't slug, you're going to be left behind.
Very interesting. Ron,
and
pleasure.
It'd be interesting what ball they use. Because, you know,
yeah, I don't think they'll use the Super Bowl again this year. I don't think they will.
Okay, good. Good. I hope not.
That's what I think. Now, listen, I think it'll be more the postseason ball last year, which clearly they changed the ball for the postseason. Everybody said it. Anyone you talked to said the ball that was going out in the regular season was not the same ball in the postseason. Everyone was saying it. So maybe they found a happy medium with the ball this year. I don't think they go to the Super Bowl this year. Maybe I'm wrong, but maybe, you know, I don't know. Maybe they think it's box office. They want to go to the Super Bowl. You never know.
Hey, we'll have this conversation a week into the season. I'll tell you which one they're using.
All right, Ron, pleasure. Hope you're doing well. Take care. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you. Ron Darling, back after that. All right, we're back. Let me, before I take a couple calls, let me get to the switch hitters for today. For Bernie, it was 626.93. This is before Bernie has really established himself. You know, he's batting leadoff, went 3-for-5, 31 RBIs, hitting 250. And remember, he had not really started to come of age yet. He hadn't shown any power yet. He hadn't started to hit the home run yet. That started to come a little bit in 93, came a little bit more in 94, and then 95, boom. It started to come a little bit at the end of 94. He got his average up to 290. Remember that was a year that wasn't a full year. The next year he started to explode, and then came the great years, you know, 96, 97, 98, 99, 2000, all those great years. For Mickey, this was 61, so this is M&M Boys. They beat the Angels. It was 626. He hit his 23rd homer off Ken McBride. You might remember Ken McBride. The Yankees were rolling. 23 homers, 58 RBIs, 311 batting average, 436 on base percentage as he went to his great year in 50, in 61, where he hit 54 home runs. And he and Maris, you know, chased the Bambino deep, deep into the summer, only to have Mickey abscess his hip and then pull out, and then Raj obviously go after it to the final days of the season. But at this point, he had 23 homers on this June 26th. And already 58 RBIs. It's a heck of a first half, huh? 23 home runs in the first half of the season. Big year, obviously, for him. All right, let me get to a couple calls here. Andrew and Scarsdale. Eddie and Sweeney coming up at 7 o'clock tonight. Andrew, what's up?
Hey, Mike, you and Ron kind of touched on how pitches are going to be handled. My question to you is specifically around Gerrit Cole. Yankees have a lot of money, a lot of years invested in him. do they, I don't want to say babysit him, but do they treat him a little differently?
Absolutely
given
not.
The abnormality of this season?
Absolutely
they,
not.
Do they just let him go?
First of all, this is a pitcher that you know is extremely studious, okay? He is a thinking man's pitcher. If you've ever listened to him, he's almost arrogant about talking about pitching. He is a thinking man's pitcher. He has a plan that is clearly his. He understands what he's doing. I expect him to be extremely dominant. I will be very surprised if he's not. I think he will be among the most dominant pitchers in the sport. I think it'll be. I think he will have an enormous year, even in the abbreviated season. I think he will be one of the big figures, and I think he will have a tremendous season. I'd be very shocked if he doesn't. I think he will have a team behind him that will produce runs, a team behind him that will let him pitch very daring and very aggressively because of who he is and the kind of offense he has behind him. I think he will have a very big season. I do not think they will baby any of these starters, and these teams know what these teams are going to want to do is they're going to want to get off to the really good teams are going to want to get off to very fast starts, put this out of question early where it's not even an issue. Let's get 10 games over 500. What I would tell a team like the Yankees or the Dodgers is, listen, we're getting 10 games over 500 immediately, okay? We are going to race out. We're going to get 10 games over 500, and then we never look back. And that's it. I want to get 10 games over 500 as fast as – I want to get to it as fast as I can, which is 10-0, 11-1, 12-2. I want to be – before we hit the 15-5, I want to be 10 games over 500. That's how I would approach the season. I would be very aggressive early. Ron said the same thing. That's how I would play it. When you're playing a very short season, getting out fast is an enormous advantage. Justin in West Palm Beach. What's up, Justin?
Hey, Mike. Thanks for taking the call. I got a comment and a question on the PGA. Mm-hmm. There's so much young talent. It's really amazing. If you're a golf fan and you're watching this, it's the superstars that you see, you know, the budding ones too, is really incredible. One guy stands above the rest of me. It's Dustin Johnson. If he were able to make more putts than he does, he would by far be the best in the world.
Yeah, but we're living with the – see, he and Rory play the same tune, okay? If you watch both of them play, and you've watched them now for a long time, Dustin Johnson's had a rare career in that his numbers – if you look at his career, he's had a successful career. He's won a tournament in 12 straight years. He has been to the top of the polls many times. But here's the thing. He has not gotten to the tip of the iceberg of his talent. His talent is immense, but he and Rory do the same thing. They are brilliant drivers of the golf ball. They even are very good with their irons. What they're not good with is the putter. And they both miss so many birdie opportunities and eagle opportunities that it drives you mad if you watch either one of them. But this is not new to them. This is not something that's going to change now. This is something that is ingrained in their game and will be ingrained in their game for a long time. It rarely changes where one of these guys, see, the great player, the Tiger to Jack, what people don't realize about them is that they're great clutch putters. And you have to be, if you're going to be an immortal player, you have to be a clutch putter. And they're not clutch putters. They're not even good putters. They're bad putters. And
right,
they
agree.
And that's the difference. And you're going to watch, if you watch Dustin Johnson play on a given round, he will infuriate you because he will, on a given round, give away 6-7 strokes on the green. There's no question.
Easily.
I've seen Rory give away tournaments the same way. They're both immensely talented. And now Koepka is in the same game as the two of them. But what makes Koepka better is in big spots when he's on his game, majors, because Koepka doesn't, he makes the putts. And that's why he's the best player right now, because he can drive it with Rory, he can drive it with Dustin, but he can also make the putt. And that's the difference. And you watch those guys. Now, I don't know if DeChambeau's going to drive it with those guys this year with the added distance he has and the club head speed. I want to see what happens to his game when he gets in tight. But that's the key. And what you said first thing is so true. There are so many good young players out there now of any age. When you're talking about Shoffley, Cantley, Murakawa, Berger, go down the line. There's like 30 of them. And I didn't even get to Thomas and guys like that. What's happened is let's be honest, a guy who people have been waiting for to explode like Ricky Fowler may never explode. He's getting passed by the younger players now, and he's the guy now that you're forgetting about because he can't put everything together. Now, he can putt. His game's more erratic because he can putt. He's got a great putting stroke. He's got a great he controls. And the key to being a good putter is control the speed. That is the without question. You talk to any great putter, they'll tell you the key is controlling the speed of the putt. That is without question the what great putters do. And Fowler's a terrific putter. But the rest of his game is highly erratic. Spieth's game, incredibly erratic off the tee. Incredibly erratic. So it's very few of them that have the game tee to green together. But you mentioned two guys, and you could not be more right. Those two guys, and especially Johnson, and I'll put McIlroy right in there with them. Those two guys, they throw away, and thanks for the call, they throw away tournaments with both hands because they can't make putts. Frank and New Rochelle, what's up, Frank?
Hey, Mike, how are you? You know, the Knicks with these 11 people on the back page of the Post, I know it's a bunch of garbage, but I really think for this team, and I know Thibodeau's going to get the job, at least that's every report that you read. But I really think Atkinson would be the better coach. This is a young team. He had the Nets when they were young. They lost 60. I remember watching them when they lost 60. But he plays the NBA style. They run the floor. They shoot.
I like him a lot. He develops players. He's a good coach. I know him a very long time. You've heard him on the air with me.
Do you think he has any chance, Mike?
I don't think they'll hire the net coach. So I don't think he'll get the job. I don't think he'll get the job. I like him personally a lot. I've known him since he was in high school. So I've known him a very long time, okay? He develops players, and he's a very good coach. Very good coach.
I love Thibodeau, but, you know...
Listen, Thibodeau's a good coach. Thibodeau's a good coach. There's no question. And listen, thanks for the call. None of them are going to win. None of them are going to win without players. So it doesn't matter who you put in there, they're not going to win. There's plenty of quality coaches on that list. And Atkinson's a really good coach. I don't think the Knicks are going to hire an ex-Net. I don't think they are. I don't think they'll get the job. I think Thibodeau's the favorite. I don't know that he's got the job, but I think he's the favorite. Let me squeeze one more in before I get to Eddie and Sweeney. Flip in Long Island. What's up, Flip?
Hey, Mike. It's spot on with Dustin Johnson and McIlroy, especially Dustin Johnson. He can't handle the big moment at all.
He just can't putt. I mean, it's not like he's choking. He'll choke on any putt. He won't just choke on big putts. He'll choke on any putt.
Yes, and I wanted to make a point about Mickelson. I know you said he can't carry four
days, I don't
think
he can, and I'll root for him like crazy. I'm telling you, I love him. I know him fairly well. I love him personally. I just don't think he can do it 4 days in a row.
But one question, though. Does any guy at 50... looking at the last 20 years on the PGA Tour, one guy at 50 that actually could pull off a major at 50, who would it be? Anybody.
We saw Tom Watson almost do it at 60.
No, but I'm saying over the last 10, 15, 20 years.
Oh, are you saying can Phil do it? I think the problem now is consistency. So let's see. Phil hasn't had that one moment, which he has in every tournament now. And he didn't have it the first 2 days.
You know he's going to have one time in the next 5 years.
It's good.
He's going to get a major.
Listen, I personally think the way the tournaments are, the way the majors now are structured as far as layout, I think his problem controlling the drive will make it hard for him to win a major. And I would pray he would win a U.S. Open. I know he's qualified now. He got in, so he doesn't have to qualify, which is great. He got an exemption into the tournament. He belongs there anyway. So I think that's great. I'll be rooting for him. Listen, I root for him whenever he plays. I root for him.
But honestly,
if you're asking me right now, and thanks for the call, if you're asking me right now, do I think he will win this tournament this week? I don't. I'll root for him. But I think something will happen in the next 2 days and he won't win. Somebody will catch him. And I'll root for him. Every step of the way, I'll root for him. I'm telling you, I will be thrilled to watch him tomorrow. I'm thrilled what he did the first 2 days. I just don't expect him these days to put four rounds together. And if you're asking me right now, do I think he'll win another major? I don't. I hope he does, and I hope it's the U.S. Open. I just don't think he will. Because I just think it's really hard on those courses to put together four good days in your 50s. It's not easy. And with him, it's about losing the driver on those great courses and those tough courses because he'll lose accuracy. He can drive it far. He can hit it a mile. He's got great club head speed, and he's kept himself in phenomenal shape. He doesn't act like he's 50, and he hits it a mile, but he just loses accuracy and consistency with that driver. And that becomes very tough to scramble on all those courses. Now, this course he won't have to scramble much on. This is an easy course. So I just think there'll come a moment where he'll just get erratic for four or five holes here. I hope it doesn't happen. Like I said, I'll be pulling for him. Casamigos Tequila, as always, brings you the program, brought to you by those who drink it. I hope everybody has a very happy and safe weekend.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.